anche di Ceziano veniva da Rosicano. When you're sleeping, what state of mind you're in? You're in a state of low awareness. Yes. Because you hardly know what you're dreaming about. It's only sometimes when you wake up suddenly you remember that dream. Or when it's a very powerful dream, then something happens the next day just to remind you and jog your memory. But a lot of times it's very hazy. It's like being in a fog. Or a mist. You know, you can find your way around, but things aren't clear. Some dreams are very clear, but they're strange dreams. Yes? It was really, really innovative questions. I never had that question before. No, it's not possible. Because when you come out of a dharma, you just got so much energy, so much happiness, that it's very difficult to sleep. You wouldn't be able to. Some months have meditated and got into dharma at night and come out early in the morning, don't feel at all tired. It's better than sleeping. But just carry on. So no, you don't want to sleep. You can't sleep. Just too much happiness. For example, if it's quite late already, suppose when you got home you found out that you've just won the lottery today. A couple of million dollars, would you be able to go to sleep? You wouldn't be able to go to sleep at all, not for a few hours at least. You'd be so happy. And I keep saying that the jhanas are much, much better than winning a couple of million dollars on the lottery. Now that's a more interesting one. Is the attainment of jhana necessary for the attainment of stream winner? And the attainment of one's return. That is not as clear in the suttas as the necessity of jhana for the anagami and the arahats. I am of the view that yes, you do need jhanas even for stream winner. And the monks of my tradition also say that. Other people say no. So that is more controversial. However, it's just so clear in the suttas. That by the Lord Buddha teaching, that you do need jhanas for non-return and arahat. I say you do need jhanas. Other monks say no. But it certainly helps. Yes, yes. But the thing is, if you understand it, if you reflect upon it, and you really get to know where that jhana comes from and why, then the ultimate destination will probably be anagami. But some people, like even the Hindus or the Christians who attain jhanas, it's just very easy to misunderstand it. And they weren't even stream winners. They thought that was God, union with God. They got it all wrong. Yeah. Even to be a stream winner, you need to know fully that all sankharas are impermanent anicca, but all sankharas are dukkha, all dhammas are anatta. And the point is that a person who doesn't know all of that has got what I call a blind spot. There's some part of existence, it's usually in here somewhere, which you still haven't seen is impermanent, dukkha, not self. A blind spot is something you can't see. One of the monks I grew up with in Thailand, he was in the American Army during the Vietnam War, and he got shot in the back of his head, and he came very close to dying, but they managed to keep him alive. And first of all, they told him he would be blind because of his wound. When they took the bandages off, he could see, and he felt so happy that he thought he was going to be blind, but he actually had his sight. And when he was released from hospital, when he was fit enough, he was playing baseball with some of his friends. And one of his friends hit the ball with a baseball bat high into the air in his direction, and he went over to catch it. And he saw the ball coming up, and then it disappeared. It vanished. And then a bit later, it appeared again. That's what a blind spot is like. When you have a blind spot in your field of vision, it's not black. The mind fills it in. The mind can't see there's a hole in your vision. It's only through inference. He saw the ball going, the ball's going to disappear. Everyone else saw the ball. But for him, once it reached his blind spot, it completely vanished. And then it appeared again when it came out the other side. I use that simile for how we jar, which is, people call it ignorance, I like to call it delusion. There's some parts of anicca, dukkha, anatta, the three characteristics, which we can't see. And we don't know we can't see them, which is the problem. If you're a stream winner, you know you're a stream winner. It's an event, it's an occasion, something happens, and you know. But it's so difficult to fill in the area, which is a blind spot. Basically, it's right in here. That's why I keep on pointing to the knower and the doer. Who's doing this? Who's knowing this? That's where blind spots are. Yeah? People always want the easy way. Through experience, one jhana or repeated jhanas become enlightened. It's obviously the more deep your meditation, the more chance there are is of uncovering the blind spots. So, the deeper the meditation, the more meditation, the better. Technically, the one jhana will be enough, but obviously, the more times you do these things, the more experience you get of these things, the more understanding you get of these things, the more chance of fully becoming awake as a result of them. Does that answer your question? Yes? Okay. After you've got rid of the jhanas, how do you get rid of the blind spots? It's because of, like, one thing, the power of those states. The mind is very courageous. It can go to places it hasn't gone before. For example, if you want to remember past lives after jhana, just ask yourself, what's your earliest memory? And you'll be surprised just how the mind will go precisely where you tell it to go. It's so well trained after a jhana. You'll do exactly what it's told. And you get the very early memories. If you want to investigate anicca, dukkha, anatta, you just point the mind in that direction. And it will go deeper and further than you've ever gone before. It is the power of the mind, which you experience after jhanas, which gives you the strength to overcome the blind spots. Also, you have, like in scientific jargon, you have much more data to work on. You have not just the data of ordinary experience, but you have the data of these jhanic experiences for insight to work on. And much of those jhanic experiences fill in a lot of the blind spots. as long as you contemplate them afterwards in terms of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So if any of you get one of those states, please, first of all, just reflect on what that state was, what caused it, and then use anicca, dukkha, anatta. Either one of those will do. To really penetrate that experience and what this mind and body is all about. And you find you get incredibly powerful insights. The difference between trying to dig a hole with a spoon and trying to dig a hole with one of these big excavators. After jhana, you've got this huge tool you can use. In one scoop, you can make a big hole rather than just a little spoon trying to dig up the ground. You don't have to believe this. Get deep meditation and you know what I'm talking about the power of the mind after jhana and its weakness before. After, if you have got into a jhana, after you come out of the jhana, you can contemplate on the body in terms of the five senses of the body. It's an interesting thing that in science, we think the five senses are there to protect the body. In Dhamma, we know the body is there to provide a vehicle for the five senses to experience. The five senses are the important thing. They just want to experience here, experience there. And the body is under their command. The senses aren't there to protect the body. The body is there to serve the senses. So if you want to contemplate the body, contemplate those five senses. Just to see them as dukkha. In whatever form, the most delightful, beautiful, sight, sound, smell, taste or touch, even their best, the most perfect dukkha. To say sabbe sankara dukkha, all conditioned things are dukkha, even the very best. If you can do that, then your infatuation with sensory pleasures will be completely gone. And your interest in the five senses and the body will be gone. So you've abandoned the body and the senses. Yes? In sleep, yeah. Yes. Sometimes. Yes, the old astral travelling in your sleep, sometimes floating out to the ceiling, floating back again. It's sometimes those experiences during sleep are not reliable. Because sometimes people in the West, they can astral travel, sometimes they've actually done experiments. Sometimes they put a message on top of a cupboard. So you can't actually see it unless you float up there. And they, in the middle of their sleep, they try to float up there and see the message and they remember it in the morning and it was wrong. But sometimes you've got to be careful because in sleep there's a lot of imagination goes on. In real life, people can really leave the body. They can float up, they can see the message and it's right. But be careful with sleep ones because sometimes they're not accurate. Sometimes they are, but most of them are not. Yes. You're asking about the old question of Samatha Vipassana, which one is better? The way my teacher Ajahn Chah taught, and he said this so often, you cannot split Samatha and Vipassana. In Thailand, they used to have these machetes, these knives. I'm not sure if the villagers in Malaysia have these machetes. There was always one sharp end, one blunt end. And he said that you cannot split Samatha and Vipassana no more than you can take the sharp end away from the blunt end of a knife. The way we would say it, you know, here is like the two sides of a coin. You can't take the one side of a coin away from the other side of the coin. You can't take night away from day, black against white. These are inseparable, he said. Whatever is samatha, whatever is calm, will invariably lead to insight. Whatever is insight will lead to calm. What this means is, if you develop deep meditation, the mind is going to be that powerful, you're going to see so far, you're going to get insights. You have to. It's natural. You can't avoid it. If you get insights, it's going to overcome problems and obstacles. So it's so easy to get peaceful. Calm leads to insight. Insight leads to calm. The two go together. Whichever one you want to emphasize, if you say, well, I'm going to do jhanas, on the way into jhanas, you will have to get so much insight. Otherwise, you will not be able to enter there. Afterwards, you'll get so much insight. If you just focus on jhanas, it's a very powerful way of practicing insight meditation. On the alternative, if you truly practice insight meditation, it will lead to calm states of mind. You really do a lot of insight, it will lead to jhanas, whether you like it or not. Insight and calm, they go together. You may focus on one, but the other one gets dragged along behind. They are friends. Wherever one goes, the other one follows. So please remember that, because it stops all of this, samatha is better than vipassana. No, vipassana is better than samatha. I've got the right teaching. No, you haven't. I've got the right teaching. My teacher is better than your teacher. So that's not Buddhist. So anyone who focuses on samatha, they're doing vipassana. Anyone who's focusing on vipassana, they're doing samatha. So you don't need to worry about it. They're doing the same thing, basically. There's only one path, it's the Eightfold Path. Does that answer your question? Okay. Please ask it again, or ask some more. Yes.
Then it is part of the Vipassana meditation. So when we practice Vipassana meditation, so what is the thing that we need to develop the samatha first? So that we can progress in the Vipassana meditation. And what is the thing that we can, without going to the samatha meditation,
if you practice the rising and falling of the abdomen, it will lead to samatha. It is not vipassana practice, it is Samatha Vipassana practice. If you watch the breath at the tip of the nose, it's Vipassana Samatha practice. It's just the difference between Samatha Vipassana and Vipassana Samatha. So, it's exactly the same. Because if you do this, you'll find that you will lead to calm states of mind. Anyone who's done the traditional Vipassana retreats, now after a while you get very calm and very peaceful. That's Samatha. Anyone knows who's just, say, focusing on jhanas, well, now you get lovely insights into the nature of the mind and the nature of the body. These two always go together. Yes? It's very uncertain about the dry insight arahat, because the commentary says one thing in one place and another thing in another place. I already mentioned a couple of days ago about the other place in the commentary. It's supposed to be recording a saying of the Buddha, the simile of the emperor and his son who went to rule a bordering kingdom. Most of you heard that simile, so I don't want to repeat it now, which was actually showing that Samatha and Vipassana have to go together. Vipassana is not strong enough by itself. And the Lord Buddha used that simile to show the different functions of Samatha and Vipassana and how they are both necessary in order to gain enlightenment. And that's recorded in the commentary. I was talking to someone very recently and who knows the commentaries better than I do, and they said, look, it's not so that in the commentaries they say that the Sutta Vipassika is possible for means that no jhanas at all. The whole thing is very uncertain in the commentaries. They say one thing in one place, another thing in another place. But in the end, you always have to go to the word of the Buddha. Now, in the suttas, because the commentaries were written down 1,000 years after the Lord Buddha died. And as such, those commentaries are never as accurate or as truthful as the suttas themselves. And even though I've only studied a little bit of the commentaries on the suttas, I studied the commentary on the Vinaya in its entirety. And you see that many places there that it's wrong. Because it says what's opposite to the suttas or the Vinaya. Because people after the Buddha made mistakes. So I always like to just to go back to the word of the Buddha himself, as is in the suttas. And if you do that and look in the suttas, you know, you do find that you do need at least a jhana. It is absolutely clear, a jhana to get to anagami or arahat. Stream winner or once returner. Some monks read it differently. I read it that you do need jhanas for stream winners. And this is also actually the teaching in my tradition from Ajahn Banerjee Chan. Stream winner, you do need jhanas. So you have like a tradition of teachers, and you also have like the suttas. Yes. When he died, he was a stream winner. When he was alive, he was probably on the path to stream winning. And in the suttas, anyone who's on the path to stream winning, they just still call like what do they call him? On the first stage of sainthood. They don't call him Sotapanna, I'm just trying to recall now. It's the same with Mahanama. They say that he's an Arya Sāvaka. which includes even those on the path of being a stream winner. But don't call him a Sotapanna. So that's why these things are controversial. But I say, yes. There's only two times which I know of where someone in jhana has had some medical test done on them. Three times actually. I've already mentioned one, that guy who was taken to hospital, and that was no heartbeat, no breath, no brain waves. Not alpha waves, beta waves, gamma waves, no waves. The other time was a man who was, he had a congenital back problem. And because of the pain in his back, he was actually forced to really do meditation properly and get into very deep concentration. And he came up to me once in my temple in Paris with a big smile on his face, and said, "I've finally done it. I got that machine absolutely straight." And I said, "Oh, you mean the ECG, because that's the heartbeat, because that's not as hard as the brain waves." And he said, "No, I got both machines flat, the EEG and the ECG." And he turned around with a big smile. See all those people sitting in the back? They're all the doctors and nurses from my hospital. They're coming to find out what this meditation is all about. That was the second case. The third case, I think I'll probably tell this one. This was my teacher Ajahn Chah. That when he was sick, this was for many years that he couldn't speak, and he had constant supervision by a trained nurse, a male nurse from the local hospital, who was put on roster to go to the monastery and actually have one trained nurse all the time with Ajahn Chah, paid for by the King of Thailand, and two monks just to attend to his need. And one of my friends, one of the monks at Serpentine, was the monk who was with them at the time. Ajahn Chah stopped breathing. The nurse took fright and wanted to try and resuscitate him. The senior monk said, "Don't worry, he's in jhana." And the nurse decided to do a little bit of experiment. Every few minutes he took a sample of Ajahn Chah's blood while he was in this state. Because if a person's not breathing, it means there's no oxygen supply, the blood's oxygen level will go down, and that's what causes brain damage. It's not so much you're not breathing, it's that the oxygen level is not being supplied to the body. So he wanted to check out, just for safety, there was always enough oxygen in the blood during this time he wasn't breathing. And the strange thing he found out, which is actually obvious when you think about it, throughout the period he was in this state, the oxygen level on his blood remained exactly the same. He was not breathing, he wasn't taking in oxygen, but during that state he wasn't using oxygen either. The body was not consuming oxygen, so the oxygen in the blood was just going round and round and round. There was no breath. So those are the only times that I know of when because of someone being carried off to hospital because their wife thought he was dead, or because of Ajahn Chah being sick and a nurse being there at the time, the only times I know of a person being medically examined while they were in these states. So those are the only ones I know of. Does that make sense to you? Are you a doctor yourself? Are you a doctor yourself?
No, I
didn't. Never say anything.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.